Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu.
With a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening.
Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the multitude. And on the seventh day, God finished the work that God had done, and God rested on the seventh day from all the work that God had done. And so God blessed the seventh day, hallowed it, because on it God rested from all the work that God had done in creation.
Reverend Billy Michael Bonner is the pastor of New Life Presbyterian Church in College Park, Georgia. He's one of a few pastors who was asked earlier this week by a blog that's called On Scripture. It's about the intersections of faith and society and how the two might be woven together and how our faith might speak to what's happening in the world. He was one of a few pastors invited by that blog to reflect on what they'd be preaching about this Sunday in the wake of everything happening in Ferguson, Missouri. And this is what he wrote. Admittedly, in the spirit of the late Reverend Dr. Vernon Johns, who once preached the sermon, "It's Safe to Murder Negroes," I was quite tempted this coming Sunday to preach my own sermon titled, "It's Still Safe to Murder Negroes." But upon further reflection, I've chosen to homiletically respond to the police shooting of young Michael Brown and the ensuing outrage of the Ferguson Black community with the sermon titled, "Confessions of a Tired Black Preacher." Generally speaking, he says, the sermon will invite hearers into his struggle as a young black male preacher in the United States of America, as he tries to understand what the message of the Christian gospel has to say to the perils of racial prejudice in our times. He continued, and then he concluded with these words. "Finally, I hope to encourage the hearers not to give up or to get weary, but to keep fighting the good fight until justice rolls down like a river, righteousness like a never-failing stream." Confessions of an Entire Black Preacher. Billy Michael Honor is one of so many folks in our world today who are tired from joining God in the holy work of mending the world. That is itself tireless work. They're tired of waking every morning to the same old stories. They're tired of organizing peaceful protests in response to the militarized police force that we've created to protect us from ourselves. They're tired because the old ways that we've known just don't work anymore. That's how Carrie McCombs sings it. They long for justice to roll down like a river and righteousness like a never-failing stream. See, witnesses say that Michael Brown was shot after he stopped and put his hands up, as we did in that song, "The Sun Will Rise." And it wasn't an isolated incident. Racial tensions in Ferguson have mounted and they've boiled for so long. This is a community that is 65% African-American and less than 3% of its police force are black. Last night, the governor intervened, as many people hoped that the governor would, and enforced what many saw as completely unrealistic, a midnight curfew. And so more protests ensued and more arrests were made and then guns were shot again. We've all heard too many stories of unarmed black men being killed or beaten when they pose no real danger to anyone. The tiredness that we experience comes because people in Ferguson and around the country are angry, and once again, their humanity has been denied. And God cannot abide that, not now or ever. There have been times, though, in my own life when incidences like this one reiterated for me that we simply don't need Sabbath. What we need is justice. What we need is beloved community, people organizing one another to see one another as God's beloved children. And Sabbath doesn't really seem like it can help me get to that place. Sabbath has often for me felt like an excuse to not keep on keeping on and creating the waves of hope and healing and love and justice that God longs for us to experience together as God's people. So that former version of myself would never have planned a worship series that's called Summer Sabbath. And the truth is, I think it's because I didn't really understand the depth and the nuance and the power and the possibility of Sabbath. Not sure that I tell you I understand it now. But I believe deeply that the practice of Sabbath keeping has something profound to teach all of us in the wake of Michael Brown's murder. As we come together with mixed up emotions, tiredness, anger, helplessness, loss, and longing. But if we're able to learn from this, first we'll need to reflect for a time together on what Sabbath is and what Sabbath isn't. Sabbath is grounded in the first story of creation. Let me share a part of that. After each day, we finally move in Genesis 2 to, and on the seventh day, God finished the work that God had done and rested. We are created in God's image. Thus, to rest is to pattern our lives after the rhythm of God. One Old Testament scholar, Walter Brueggemann, writes it this way. That divine rest on the seventh day of creation has made clear that God is not a workaholic. That God is not anxious about the full functioning of creation. And that the well-being of creation does not depend on endless work. I'm going to say that again because I need to hear that a lot more times than once. That God is not a workaholic. God is not anxious about the full functioning of creation. And the well-being of creation does not depend on endless work. This performance and exhibit of divine rest, writes Brueggemann, thus characterizes the God of creation, creation itself, and the creatures made in the image of God as resting. Creation is to be enacted and embraced without defining anxiety. Indeed, such divine rest serves to delegitimate and dismantle the endless restlessness sanctioned by the other gods and enacted by their adherents. He concludes that divine rest on the seventh day, moreover, is recalled in the commandment of Exodus 31, wherein God is refreshed on the seventh day. So it's not this God that's immovable and fixed, but it's a God who is depleted and finds rest, recovers a full sense of God's self. We're made in that image, called to find that ourselves. On the seventh day, God rested, Sabbath, 24 hours, work stoppage. And it's a direct reference to what we sing and hold as we gather for communion in our community. It's the creation liturgy. So we move through the days of creation, and each moment, the order is becoming more and more complicated and complex. We're like moving up a ladder. And where do you anticipate that that's going to end? God resting? That's the culmination of creation. Couldn't it be like God fixed a few minor details, or God went back and like reworked a couple things? The perfectionist in me needs a God that fixes some of that stuff. But the story has God rested as the culmination. And it says it's good. Sometimes that's a word that's hard for me to hear, that it's good as it is. We describe it this way in our communion liturgy. You're the one I've been imagining. You and everything you see around you, my beloved creation, and all of it is good. But it wasn't good for long, because God's people could not be faithful despite God's love and generosity and goodness. It wasn't good for long. That's the truth. And that truth can make us tired. God's people were tired when God commanded them to remember the Sabbath. It happens two different times. First in Exodus, the people of God are weary. And God calls them to remember the Sabbath grounded in that story of creation. That on the seventh day, God rested and were made in God's image, so we too are to rest. And as if to say, like, it's not enough for me to put the commandments down once. Here they are one more time. Some of you are slower, like me, in getting some of these things. So the command here, though, is a little bit different. This time it's to observe the Sabbath by seeing to it that no one, not even your animals, work on that day. These are people whom God has freed from enslavement, and God calls them to celebrate their freedom by refraining from work and ensuring that those around them stop working too. That's like taking the machine of production and just putting a clog in it. Once a week, we're going to shut this down. Sabbath is about resting, and for many of us, that is hard enough in and of itself, just taking the time to rest from production and from all of the anxiousness that we hold. And Sabbath is about God's liberation, God's freedom, and God's refusal for us to keep going in those same ways of hurting and harming one another and calling us to stop. To remember that the freedom that God has always been moving with in the world, it's a both and. It's rest and remembering of God's liberation. Not either or. In the Jewish tradition, it's called Shabbat. It's the heart of Judaism. In observant Jewish homes, families gather on Friday night with others at sundown. A woman lights the Sabbath candle. And following that sundown, all of the activities associated with commerce are prohibited. This keeping of Sabbath is rooted in the requirement of no work or commerce as a way to honor God and respect the human needs of those who are around us. It's a both and. We're called to both rest and remember God's liberating movement in the world. Jesus proclaims that it's lawful to do good on the Sabbath. So we as followers of Jesus have to throw this into the mix as well. It's hard enough to simply rest, and then it's even harder to both rest and remember God's liberating action. But now Jesus is calling us as well to discern where is good happening in the world, and don't stop from doing that on the Sabbath. No wonder it's hard to keep these things. No wonder it's hard for me to figure this out in my own life. Constantine had a way of figuring it out. He declared in 321 that we're going to make this day officially, legally, a day of rest and worship. That's one approach. But we mostly drifted away from that. Not that it really ever worked anyways. But can you imagine it? A full day of rest and remembrance of God's liberating act of freeing God's people. I confess that that practice is hard for me to imagine. A full day of rest and remembrance. I'm better at carving out a few minutes here or there. That's when I'm at my best. Barbara Brown Taylor has something to say to people like me. She says, plenty of us take an hour, I just said a few minutes, I wish I could take an hour. Plenty of us take an hour here or there and call it Sabbath. Which is like driving 5 miles to town and calling it Europe. I confess that that's often the case for me. As I was working on this and trying to figure out the difference between simply resting and unhinging from all the anxieties that I have, which is hard enough, but trying to differentiate that from Sabbath rest, which is rest, it's also about remembering the liberating act of God. I was trying to figure out, where in my life do I actually practice this? Come on, find something. You got to talk to people about this. And what I held was that on Thursday mornings for about the last 8 years or so, I've gathered with a small group of people. Most of them are retired pastors. And we gather to pray. It's a small group. There's, to me on the day, there's 6 or 7, sometimes 8 of us there. For 2 hours, we center in silence. We watch over one another in love by sharing what's happening in our lives. It's my kitchen table on Thursday morning. It's one of my kitchen tables. Silence, watching over one another, love. We open scripture and we reflect on how this ancient story is shaping and speaking into our life. It might be as close as I get to a full day of Sabbath, both resting and remembering God's liberating act of justice. Sarah and I have tried to carve out some time of rest, and this week has helped me to try to rethink that. So I'm going to share, just kind of in process, where we are about that. Sarah and I have tried really hard since we had Eleanor. Our life has shifted, as everyone does, so much. Because it used to be that we could simply rest together, and there weren't people that were really dependent upon us. So carving this out simply worked, but with a 4.5-year-old, if we rest, she's still dependent on us for some basic needs, so we have to plan those out. And then we keep that low-level anxiety of, have we planned out everything that she's going to need as we go about this day? And no matter how many times I think we might have, the answer is no. We have not done what we need to do that. And so, one of the ways that we've tried to do this is Sarah chooses to work less than full-time, and we choose to, as a family, to take Mondays together as a rest day. And my hope is that we can try to reframe that as a Sabbath day. And I think it's both a really radical thing to in our world today for her as this young physician at UC Davis to choose, as others do, to not work full-time, because it says, I'm not going to try to climb up the ladder in the exact same way everyone else does. That's a radical way of being. It's a deep expression of generosity, and I'm not going to get caught in that same race. And so our Mondays are times in which we try to rest together as a family. What I've been noticing, though, is that it doesn't really seem to hold as Sabbath. I'm not sure that most of the time our resting is really rooted in a remembering of God's story of creation and rest, or God's liberating act of freeing God's people. I can't say that we really root our lives in that place as we gather on Mondays. But I do know that we've taken a step, and I think it's an important step, to mark together that Mondays are going to feel different to us than any other day. What I'm wondering about, as I'm sharing in this space, what I'm wondering about is, what could it look like for our Saturday evenings to become that, and then for worship to be kind of the center of our Sabbath, and then for the rest of Sunday, instead of Linda and I race to try to get as many things done as we can on Sunday afternoon to help us be a community of generosity, love, and grace. And what would it look like for us to shift that? It's kind of hard for me to imagine, quite honestly. We've got a long list of stuff that needs to happen around this place. And I know in your lives, your list might be even longer than ours is, than mine is. My list is long. I've got it really, yeah, exactly. Maybe Sunday is already your Sabbath day. And maybe you've marked it intentionally, and it's a huge step that you've taken to simply carve out time to come and to be together in this space, to root your life in grace, and to say that I'm not going to go in the ways that the world is calling me, but I am going to slow down and find ways to remember God's sacred story and allow that to shape my story. I'm going to pattern my life after the rhythms of God. Maybe being here this morning is an expression of just that. As Sarah and I try to think about how we're going to claim Sabbath as a day, not just a moment in our lives, but as a day, I think first and foremost for us, it's not about planning it out. That is one of my tendencies, is to try to plan it all out and structure it, to organize it. And I'm going to caution myself, and maybe some of you against that, but to simply try to set aside a day to experience life together by slowing down, by playing, and by finding joy in simply being together with God and remembering that story. A pastor in Kalamazoo says it this way: we spend 6 days working and working hard, and that's good, and we're trying to make things better, but on the seventh day, we have a chance to see the goodness that already is. Barbara Brown Taylor reminds me of just how hard and how radical that notion of communal rest really is in our day. See, in its community form, she writes, Sabbath is not only about rest, but also about resistance. Each time it appears in the Torah, the commandment limits the exploitation of others as well as the exhaustion of the self. When you stop working, so do your children, your animals, your employees. Even if they do not believe in your God, you believe in your God, so they get a day of rest. By interrupting our economically sanctioned social order, every week Sabbath suspends our subtle and not so subtle ways of dominating one another on a regular basis. She writes, the lion is restrained from making a profit on the lamb who may still choose to lie down for a Sabbath nap alone, but is free from the fear of waking up as lamb chops on this one day at once. That's her growing edge where Sabbath is concerned. And she knows that she can't do it alone. God did not give the commandment to a single person, but to a people. Knowing that only those who rested together could be equipped to resist together. I believe that Billy Michael Honor knows something of that. But as his people gather in Georgia this morning, they're finding a way to rest and to restore themselves, to remember God's liberating story that doesn't call us to isolation or rest, doesn't pull us away from the worries of the world, but empowers and emboldens and strengthens us to get caught up in the kind of holy work of mending the world that God is alive and involved with in this moment. And so I wonder what it looks like for us to rest this day. To rest in that Sabbath tradition. My prayer is that the people who've been walking with their hands high in the streets in Ferguson, that they might find a day of rest. That the good people of New Life Presbyterian Church, where right now Billy Michael Honor is finishing a sermon, finishing his own words and reflection that he's titled Confessions of a Tired Black Preacher. May that tiredness be met this morning by a God who calls us out into the world to be and to embody healing and hope and love. May we all be reminded of what it means to be made in the image of God, all of us, that all means all. And when Sabbath ends, when our time of resting and remembering God's liberating act that was, may that hold us and inspire us to join God once more in the holy work of mending the world that God so longs for all of us to be beloved children of God.